Accession number 29556, Mr. Brian Haskell Thomas, Real 1. Can you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Haskell Thomas?
I was born in Welling in Kent on the 22nd of May 1923.
And could you tell us a bit about your family background, your parents and what they did for a living?
My father was a bank manager, and so we moved around a little. And both he and my mother were musical, and so there was a lot of music in our lives. And somebody gave me a World War I side drum when I was about six, and it went on from there. I played the drums everywhere.
I'll come on to your music, because I know that's a very big part of your life. So how many in the family, just you or...?
I had a brother.
And was it a comfortable upbringing then?
Oh yes, yes. We lived over the bank in those days, as the managers did. They were usually fairly big buildings, and we lived over the bank, and it was quite easy. And my dad started a sea cadet unit in 1937, and I was one of the first cadets.
Now, so, did you live in Welling, or did you move about?
We moved from Welling to Southend in Essex when I was about six or seven, where my father was a manager, quite a young age.
Now, tell us a bit about your education.
I went to school in Essex and was educated in the Navy.
Now, tell me about the school first.
Well, it was
I understand the point you make.
It was a local school, independent school. When the war came, we were evacuated to Burnham on Crouch, and we used to cycle there.
So what subjects did you at school did you generally like, were good at, disliked, were bad at, if you see?
English was the best, and the rest of them were fairly straightforward. But I wasn't a chap who spent a lot of time studying them all. I was more interested in playing in bands and so on.
Well, let's talk about, well, we'll do sport first. Were you interested in sport at all?
Swimming and cricket.
Any good at them?
Well, I could swim very well. Of course, we were at the mouth of the Thames. A lot of water there. A lot of fun. And cricket. They used a hard ball, which put me off a bit.
Now, tell me about... you started at six, you say, with your musical. So take me through the development of your musical thing, just well, to the start of the war anyway. How did your musical sort of interest develop?
Well, both my mother and father were musical. My father, being Welsh, played the piano, sang. My mother sang, and they were members of local operatic and dramatic societies, and so there was music there all the time. And then I discovered the dance bands and jazz, and it went on from there.
At what age did you start to take an interest in that, or was that after the war had started?
Oh no, before the war. I mean, I used to listen on the Cat's Whisker radios in bed late at night, the dance bands coming from the West End hotels, and that produced the interest. Which
would you buy records or?
Oh yes, yes.
And what were your favourites at the time, as a young teenager?
Well, people like Nat Gonella, the Cockney trumpet player, playing with Lou Stone, and Harry Roy. He couldn't sing and couldn't play the clarinet, but he had a very good band. And a lot of other bands like that. Then, of course, the music from the States, the big bands, Artie Shaw, Benny Goodman, Mr. Miller, of course. And they were, you know, building up my interest.
And was it jazz in particular, always jazz? Or did you...
Well,
you
jazz and dance music. And my brother played the trumpet. I had two cousins, one who played the piano, one played the tenor saxophone. And we used to have a little band above the bank, and we were warned off because every night they had to hand calculate the day's business. No computers in those days, and they kept getting it wrong because of the noise from upstairs.
Tell me about your little band. Now, you were a drummer, were you?
Yeah,
you got a side drum first.
Yeah, the bass drum and cymbals and hi-hats and technical things like that.
And it was something you just took to from an early age?
Oh, yes, yes. Well, it's in the genes. I've got a 6-year-old granddaughter who's already played the drums in the festival hall. So it's in the genes.
And tell me about the little band. How did you what was the little band you put together before the war?
Well, just the four of us, and then I got involved with other local amateur dance bands.
So what would a typical line of a dance band be in Southend?
Well, piano, string bass, drums, saxophone and clarinet.
And would you rehearse much?
As much as we could. I mean, usually each performance was a rehearsal, because you're on a big learning curve.
What sort, would you write your own material, or would you perform standards?
Well, we'd perform standards, really.
And was it dance band or jazz, or both?
Both, but a bit of each, because the best tunes were written in the 20s and 30s, and we used those. This is why Rod Stewart has recognised his songs are not very good. He now has recorded 5 CDs of the music of the 20s and 30s.
So, and what would a typical dance band gig be like, you know, and I mean still when you're before the war, I mean, where would you play? And what
well, at clubs such as a conservative club or a working man's club or a group of people like a society of people interested in music societies.
And would they pay?
Oh yes, modestly. We were in it for the enjoyment of ourselves, really.
It was the music. And what about, would you drink when you went to gigs? You'd be underage, but would you?
No.
So you'd just go for the literally for the music. Any other big hobbies?
Well, the sea, because we were by the sea. When I became a sea cadet, were on the water a lot.
Which came first, your interest in the sea or the sea cadets?
Well, the interest in the sea came first, and it was...
And what was it? Was it the history, you know, the Navy, or was it...
Well, yes.
Or just the thing
everything
itself?
About it.
And how did you pursue that interest before you joined the Sea Cadets?
Well, reading, books, films about the sea.
Now, tell me about your activities with the Sea Cadets. You joined them in... when you
1937.
And what were the activities? What started with the uniform...
Well, we had the uniform, of course, and we had...
What was it, the uniform?
Well, it's a standard naval, ordinary sailor's uniform.
And what was a typical night at the Sea Cadets like? Where would you meet?
Well, we met in a place called the Kursaal, which is an amusement place in Southend, quite famous. And then we eventually managed to buy a disused building from the local water company in Wiscombe-on-Sea, and that is still running today. HMS TS Implacable, training ship Implacable, it's called.
And so what would you do? So you'd turn up at either the Kursaal or HMS Implacable. What would you do? What would a night's activity
well,
be?
Well, we would learn Morse code, signal flags, knot tying, because rope work was very important, and... of course, marching. We had a band which used to head the Southend Carnival, which lasted a week every year.
So you play drums in that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, in those, I mean, how far did you get with things like Morse and signalling?
Oh, quite a long way. And of course.
Did you take to it? Because not everyone does.
Yeah. And of course, I can talk more about that later when I actually joined the Navy proper.
But you made a good start there.
Oh, yes,
yes. You had
yes.
no problems with it.
No.
So you enjoyed the Sea Cadets. You did that from how long? 37 to 39, I presume.
Well, no, it continued until I joined the Navy proper in 1941. And we were set up to provide emergency communications in Southend if bombing took some of the things one normally uses, like telephone exchanges, out.
Right. Now, tell me about the outbreak of war then. I mean, did you see it coming?
I was... Oh, yes. Well, I was actually at sea the day war broke out on a destroyer, HMS Vimy, built in 1917, which was a real wreck of a ship.
Now, what were you doing aboard her?
Well, instead of having a two-week holiday in a bell tent in a wet field, we used to go to sea on a naval ship, because most of the guys eventually ended up in the Navy anyway, and it was the ideal thing to do.
So what would you do aboard HMS? What do you remember about that and then leading up to it?
Having seven eggs for breakfast one morning because everybody else was unwell. but we were generally given a tour of the ship, told what all the various pieces of equipment were. And in those days, of course, they even had a coke stove in the mess deck where the sailors were. It seems odd to have a coke stove in a ship that rolls like the clappers all over the place. And strangely enough, 4 years later, that ship came alongside mine in Liverpool. Still looked a wreck. And they are having a change of captain. And what happens then, the new captain always calls the crew on the quarterdeck, gives them a pep talk. And he said to these sailors, "This isn't my ship. It's not your ship. It's our ship." One of the sailors shouted, "Let's sell it."
What were the mess deck conditions like on the Vimy?
Oh, pretty basic. Because you had lockers in each side of the mess deck where the sailors ate and slept, and their hammocks were slung from hooks above the lockers. And there were very strict disciplines on how you secure a hammock, how you hang it, and all. So how you take it down and pack it up, because when the ship gets hold, quite often the hammocks are used to stuff the hole until you can fix it. So they had various use. Everything was useful. Didn't waste anything.
And how did you take to the food? You mentioned six or seven.
Well, the food was quite good. Basic, but good. And they had a system where each mess, the groups of sailors divided into little messes. Groups of sailors who organised their own food, which was available from the ship's stores, and then one of them delegated each day to be the cook, which meant he had to prepare it, but didn't cook it, because the galley cooked it. Of course, it was a coal-fired galley in those days.
And the results were good?
Oh, yes, yes.
And what sort of duties would you do aboard the Vimy?
Well, just running messages and keeping lookout.
And were you treated as sort of midshipmen or were you treated as seamen?
No, we were treated as ordinary sailors. It's the best way to do it, because if you haven't been an orderly sailor, you can't really get into their mind when you're an officer.
Now, so anything else about the time before the outbreak of war on that ship?
This was the day war broke out. We were on
it. Is that your first day?
No, we about the eighth day, I think. But then, we got sent home.
So it was just routine?
Oh, yes, yes.
Now, how did you react to the outbreak of war?
Well, I thought...
Did they play the broadcast on the ship?
Oh, yes, yes.
What do you think of...
Well, I thought we were going to be in for a difficult time. And a lot of people... Some people thought, it'll all be over in 5 minutes, but... As we know, the Battle of the Atlantic lasted 68 months, unceasingly.
But you didn't know that then?
Oh, no.
But you thought it would be hard?
Oh, yes.
Did you think it would involve you? You were, 16 then?
Yeah, I thought so. Well, I was then training to go in the Merchant Navy after that. But they were so short of...
Now, hang on, you were still at school, I thought.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah, but I went to HMS Worcester, the naval training ship in the Thames off Greenhithe.
When did you start there?
39 and all of 40 and part of 41.
We'll come to that then. So at the moment you're at your normal school.
Yeah.
Now, what was the initial impact of what? You went back home and the school term would be about to start, I presume.
Yes.
Now, did it start or were you evacuated?
No, it started, then we were evacuated to Burnham on Crouch.
What do you remember of that evacuation?
Well, most people thought, oh, there's a bit of an adventure here. And it was quite sparse. We were in a big old house somewhere near there. And the news didn't come through all that quickly until we'd finished school for the day and were able to listen to the evening news.
And,
of course, the phony war was then on.
The whole school, then.
Mm.
Now, what were you living... Were you living in ones and twos with people, or were there a lot of you in this old house?
Oh, yes, a lot.
So the whole
school... In the dormitory, yes, yes. But very soon after that, I went to HMS Worcester in the Thames.
So how long were you evacuated to Burton on Crouch?
Oh, about 6 months. But we come home at the weekends on our bicycles.
So till March 40?
Yeah.
And how did you get on with the locals in Burnham on Crouch?
Well, there weren't too many of them. They only had sailing bus. But we got on very well with them. So if we could continue our, those of us who were interested, our interest in the sea with all the yachts and so on there. And of course, a lot of the boats eventually ended up in Dunkirk.
And you were there till what, March 40?
Mm.
And what qualifications did you get at school? I mean, did you do your exams there, or how did you come to go to HMS Worcester?
Well, because I wanted to get into the Navy quickly, and that was a prime, one of the three prime training, independent training schools for people going to the Merchant Navy or the Navy.
Did you have to pass an exam to get to HMS Worcester?
No, just an interview.
What was the interview like?
Well, quite difficult. A very tough Captain Jackson ran the place, and he was very direct and to the point, but that's fair enough.
What do you think he was looking for?
Well, people with initiative, I think.
So you went there. Now, what was the name of the school on HMS Worcester?
It was HMS Worcester.
It's just HMS Worcester School?
Yeah. Well, yes, just called HMS Worcester. It was an old wooden ship like Victory.
And where was it?
Moored off Greenhithe in the Thames.
Greenhithe. And you started there when?
I suppose the middle of 40.
June.
July. Something like that.
And what were conditions like aboard there? How was the ship set up?
Well, we were only on the ship for a few weeks, and then they said, look, it's going to be too dangerous for you to stay on this ship because, you know, the Germans might bomb it. So we were moved to an old house in Footscray nearby on the land, on the Kent side.
Now, doing the ship first, what was life like on the ship?
Oh, hard.
In what way?
Conditions were pretty sparse. There was no heating in the ship. And the best we could do was have extra clothing when we were in the hammocks. But during the day, you were rushing about hither and thither. But then when we got to Footscray, it was a bit better.
So what was a typical day like aboard the ship? The training program?
Up at 6:30, cold shower. And then a bit of PT on the quarter deck, and then breakfast, and then go to various classes in all the aspects of the sea that you had to get involved in. Navigation, signals, handling ships. We had boats which you could row around, and one or two motor boats, get the feel of how these things are controlled.
And the bombing hadn't actually started then, I presume.
No.
In September when it did.
Yeah, that's right. It was felt best for us to be on land.
And this was training for the Merchant Navy?
Yeah, primarily.
Now, anything about, how did you enjoy the life on the Worcester before you moved?
Oh, well, it was very exhilarating, really. I mean, tough, but that's the way the Navy works.
And what happened next? And you moved to Footscray.
Yeah, into a big old house, old mansion.
And that was after the bombing had started.
Yes.
So rough. And Do you remember the bombing?
Oh, yes.
Tell us about the bombing. How much an impact did it have?
Well, it's quite dramatic, really. I was coming back for after holiday one term, which meant I had to go by train to Woolwich, or to the Tilbury, and then get on the Woolwich ferry, and then trundle down on the railway to Footscray, and I was taking my drum kit with me, including a bass drum, would you believe? And of course the line was bombed, so I had to walk down the track rolling this bass drum back to school. Not far, but you know, when you're in these circumstances, you get on with it.
And any air raids in the Footscray area?
Oh yes, yes.
What were they like?
Quite spectacular. Of course, there was a big airfield nearby.
Which one?
I'm trying to think of its name.
Never mind. No,
I'll tell you later.
And what were the raids like?
Well, quite intense. A lot of noise, of course. A lot of searchlights, a lot of anti-aircraft fire. And I suppose we were both thrilled and frightened.
Now, what about your air raid shelters? Did you have one at the school, at Footscray?
Oh, yes, yes.
What was it like in there? I mean, what type
well, we went down in the old cellars of the place, which you could argue is a mistake, because if the house gets hit, you're buried in all the rubble. But what else could they do?
So they didn't have an air raid shelter per se?
Not really, no. It was all very early in the whole conflict.
But no bombs particularly near the
trouble? No.
At that time?
Railway lines and near the docks.
And what about raids on your family home back in Southend? Were they all right, or were there not many raids in Southend?
Well, there were, because it was the central point where all the convoys going through the English Channel and up the North Sea mustered. And this is where the group called Convoy Signalmen were based. The convoys were always in charge of a retired admiral brought back to be commodores of convoys, together with a senior merchant navy captain on one of the ships. And the control of this, the signalman for these convoys, was run from Southend. And they've just had their last reunion, like us.
And the point being, what's that got to do with the air raids, excuse me, on Southend? Were the Germans attacking them?
Oh, yes, yes. They knew that this was a collection point for ships going through the English Channel up the North Sea.
So it wasn't that they were attacking the Commodore, it was they attacking the ship.
Oh, that's right, yes.
Did you have any close escapes from air raids, or any stories of that nature that illuminate what was going on?
Not until later.
Now, how did the syllabus progress then it was called HMS Worcester.
Yeah, yeah.
Australia.
Well, we followed the same lines as we were on the ship. Navigation, seamanship. We still had some boats on a big lake. But they endeavoured to run the thing as though we were still on the ship. Both the senior officers of the school were ex-merchant navy captains, so they knew what they were up to, and they were very good.
How did you get on with the instructors? I mean, you know, what were their strengths as far as you were concerned? What made them so good?
Well, they always had a little bit of humour in their lectures, which is important for any organisation, particularly that time, which helped to soften the blow of some of the things they were suggesting that we ought to be doing. I mean, things like trigonometry, it was a bit of a problem.
What about, were they very strict, discipline-wise?
Oh, yes, yes. Yes, that's what the Navy really is, merchant and royal. Without discipline, it doesn't work.
But you had no problem at all?
No.
And what about how did you get on with the ordinary, well, the lads, pupils?
Well, we started a band.
And was there any bullying amongst the lads?
No, not really.
What do you mean, not really?
They kept a firm hold on this sort of thing. There were a bit of competition between the various types of chaps, as you get in any organisation. But it was, any bullying was really very quickly stamped on.
So it was more. It was just more competitive.
Yeah.
Something and nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing too serious.
No, no.
What about the exams? The assessment of you there. How were you assessed? Was it an exam system or?
Exam system. I failed every one.
Now, why did you fail?
I was more interested in the music.
Even with against the Navy?
Yeah.
What type of exams were they? I mean...
Well, mostly written. I think the trigonometry that I fell down on.
So that would undermine your navigation?
Oh, yes, yes. But I think I was lazy because I was interested in the music. Because we had a band, a jazz band, with a group of very mixed people, but they all gelled together very well.
All pupils?
Oh, yes.
So where were you playing with them?
Oh, only just around the place and the occasional local village hall things.
But that was distracting you enough to stop you passing
through. Yeah, I noticed our pianist just died. He was in Dartford.
Now, didn't they just... I mean, what surprises me was such strict instructors. They didn't saw you being distracted by the music. They didn't just stop you.
Oh, of course, I think they wanted to make sure that we had some diversion. But I diverted too far.
Now, what did it mean that you'd failed your exams? You see what I mean? It mean you weren't going to go anywhere. What happened as a result?
Well, then I joined the Navy.
Now, so when did you leave HMS Worcester, in the Footscray?
About September 41.
So you were there roughly, a year and 3 years?
Yeah, yeah.
But you left with no qualifications?
That's right.
Now, how did you come to join the Navy? Tell me how you went about it.
Well, I was called up. I knew I was going to be called up. And one of the things the Navy wanted to do was anybody who could be possibly officer quality had to spend at least 6 months at sea as an ordinary sailor. Which is good, because you get into the sailor's mind then. And that's what I did.
So the call-up, how were you assessed as a potential officer?
Well, background of the sea cadets. I could tie a bowline faster than anybody had ever seen. But that's just an aside. And went before Board of Admirals. And I was what they call a CW candidate, commissioned warrant.
Now, and that all happened in September 41. Now, where did you have to go to then when you were called up?
HMS Collingwood, near Portsmouth. And bell tents in a forest.
That's a shore station, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, still there. But it's buildings now rather than bell tents.
And what was your reception? So you got there in September?
Yeah.
And what was your reception like when you got there? You know, you arrived...
You're a sea cadet. Oh, you're in charge of this group then. That's the way they test you out. Very good, too.
Were you given a rank or were you just...
I was an ordinary seaman. As we all were.
But you were just put in charge of a group.
Yeah, and I'd had two irascible ex-convicts in my group. But, you know, you're bound to meet all kinds of people.
I think we'll come on to that. So... Where exactly were you living? What were the living conditions like in the tents?
Pretty basic. Particularly we had a madman who ran through the woods hurling bricks through the tent flaps in the night.
Who was he?
Well, some local chap who couldn't stand tents in his little forest where he'd played for all his life. I mean, incidents puncture your life, don't they? He punctured the tent as well.
It was September, but winter's coming then. I mean,
oh, very cold. Bitter.